Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now for introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Jennifer Chen. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Sheila, and welcome everyone to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Jennifer Chen, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and early next week, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. You may replay it at your convenience. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. An e-meeting URL is available to you from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Today's presenter is Howard Odishu. Howard is an advisory software engineer and ZOS comm server. He has 24 years with IBM Corporation. He has spent the last 13 years working in NVS TCP IP Level 2 support. His primary area of responsibility is in the area of TCP IP Socket APIs, which includes the TCP IP CICS sockets shipped with ZOS comm server IP. Today's topic is ZOS communication server IP CICS sockets, common user problems. The webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask attendees to answer a few quick questions via e-meeting polling. After that, the lines will open for a question and answer period. You can adjust the side and bottom scrolls to make the presentation more centered and viewable. If the view is too small, under view, make sure the make share area full screen and fit share area to windows unchecked, or just click on default layout. If you're in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation. If you're unable to access the e-meeting at this time, you may access the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site by clicking the View Presentation link, or by going to any IBM.com site and type in 700-7910 in the search box. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Howard.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon. As Jennifer mentioned, I'm going to cover common problems using the IP CICS sockets interface. Please proceed to foil 2. The first topic that I'm going to cover is problems caused by incorrectly linked or written applications. Foil 3. What I'm going to cover is a brief overview of some of the major main components that I'm going to be covering today, so they'll be fresh in your mind because I'm going to reference them from this point further. So I just wanted to point out, this is just a high-level overview. The first component that I'm going to speak of is the EZA CICAL stub program that is included in the CICS sockets interface. This stub is basically linked into each application that is written to use our EZA SOKET socket function calls. The function of the EZA CICAL stub is to ensure that the application programs correctly call our CICS true, which is named EZA CIC01, and ensure that it does that via DFH ERM KIX call. This stub is required to ensure that socket functions are running and not running under the QR task in CICS. There's also an equivalent stub for applications written using C sockets, and those stubs are named EZA CIC07 and EZA CIC17 if your C program is going to be reentrant. The next component that I'm going to cover is our true, and I think most people hopefully are familiar with CICS trues, and they are basically code that enables CICS to talk to other subsystems, and some of the more popular ones are DB2 and, of course, TCP/IP sockets. Our true enables programs to pass control to another component in the TCP/IP CICS sockets interface called the subtask, and that will be named EZA CIC03, which then has the function of passing the call, the socket function, to Unix system services via some other TCP/IP services, and I'll cover those in later foils. EZA, as I mentioned, EZA CIC01 is the module name for the TCP/IP CICS socket true. And the last component that I'm going to be covering is the subtask that I just mentioned above, and its function is to pass calls from the true to Munich System Services via a transform layer that TCP/IP sockets provides, and then back to the true. The EZACIC subtasks are attached during CICS sockets interface initialization as defined by the end task parameter in our EZA config file. These will be considered our reusable subtasks. We also have subtasks that are non-reusable that are attached and detached as needed. Next foil, please. I'm just going to give a little bit more detail on the true. The CICS sockets interface invokes our true via a DFHERM CICS function call. This true basically determines how it was invoked, i.e. was it invoked for an application socket function, CICS sync point, or task termination, and then it takes appropriate action based on how it was invoked. When the CICS application task issues its first socket call, the true picks an available subtask from the pool of reusable tasks that were created by the end task parameter, or it creates a new subtask via an attached call. At task termination, the true either marks the subtask as available to be reused, if it's reusable, or deletes it via a detached SVC call. The true and the subtask, EZACIC03, will communicate with each other via a control block called a task interface element, or a tie, and they signal each other by posting ECBs in this tie. Foil 5, please. This module is named EZACIC03, and it is called our CICS interface subtask. These, as I mentioned, are subtasks that will be attached as subtasks in the CICS region, and their main function is to talk to the true and also to the Unix System Services socket interface that we will be passing the socket functions to. As I mentioned again, and I'm going to stress this point, the function or the primary function of our applications running in CICS are required to run its socket calls under one of these subtasks. If they're not running under these subtasks and they're running under the QR task in KIX, there's a strong possibility that the entire KIX region could hang if a socket function is blocked while running in the QR task, and that will prevent other KIX-related work from running into the QR dispatcher task. And once again, the subtask also is responsible for notifying the true that the call is complete by posting ECBs in that tie element that I mentioned before. Foil 6, please. This is just a high-level foil to represent what I basically just spoke of. I just wanted to show that CICS region, the server applications, and the server transactions and the client transactions, and also the listener, either the IBM supplied listener, which is primarily named CSKL, or a user-written listener, will run as normal KIX transactions. The only difference is that when they issue socket functions, they will invoke our true. And then our true will post the subtask, which in turn will invoke OMBS system services, which in then will invoke TCP/IP functions to pass data back and forth from the client or server in your network. Foil 7, please. This is just a little bit lower layer breakdown of the previous foil. The CICS applications can be broken down either written using native EZA CICAL functions or EZA socket functions, or, as I mentioned, in C, they can use the EZA CIC 07 or 17 stubs to use socket functions, which and then will invoke the true, which and then will invoke the subtask, and so on down the line. The TCP/IP transform layer is function that TCP/IP sockets ships. It's used for both KIX and also non-KIX socket application programming using the ZOS, ComServer, IP socket APIs. So I just want to make that point known. This isn't just something that's using KIX. This is a common socket transform layer that's used for non-KIX applications as well. That transform layer has the responsibility of invoking Unix System Services or the logical file system, which will really be BPX1 system service calls, which then will invoke our physical file system, which is TCP/IP functions or UDP functions, depending on how the socket was actually allocated by the application. And then basically to the address space, who then handles transport to the physical network. Foil 8, please. And this is a summary of the previous three foils that I just spoke of. Basically, the application program will call the EasyACACL stub via either a call EasyACACL API call or a call to EasyACSocket API call. EasyACACL or EasyACIC 07 or 17 will then invoke the true indirectly via the DFHERM resource manager. The true EasyACIC 01 will validate the call, transform the program's parameter list, post the subtask ECB, and then wait for the subtask to post the call complete. The subtask, EasyACIC 03, will wake up when it's invoked by the true, pass the call to the appropriate TCP/IP socket interface, which then invokes Unix System Services to invoke the socket function. Upon return from Unix System Services, the subtask, EasyACIC 03, will post the true's ECB. The true will wake up and return back to DFHERM, which returns control back to the application. It's a pretty easy process, and I hope this summarizes the flows that I just mentioned. Foil 9, please. Okay, what I'm going to cover here is, the topic here is applications that were not, that are either linked or not linked correctly to include our stub EasyACICAL. Hopefully, some of you have used the IPCS formatters in CICS. Basically, there's some verb exits in IPCS that CICS, the CICS component ships, and those are named DFH, PD, and the 630 would be appropriate for CICS Transaction Server 2.3. Each release of CICS will have its own module. So, for instance, in CICS 3.1, the DFH PD would be 640. And the option in single quotes is PG equals 3. This will show, will give us information on the calling sequences of a particular application. Now, this particular data that we're looking at would be from an application that was actually sitting in a socket function. This is something you normally wouldn't see very often, but it is feasible to have this type of thing. For instance, if the application was in a read function or a select function call where it may not return immediately. So if you caught it at a particular time, you could actually see the calling sequence. And I think the point of this foil is to just to demonstrate that EasyACIC 01 is not seen in the calling sequence. What you're seeing there is a module named EYPRCTLC, which is the program load module. And also, one more thing that I need to point out, I believe these foils are probably very difficult for you to read. If the presentation is, and I think that's a function of our conference, they're very readable if you print them out, print the PDFs out. So a lot of this information you probably won't be able to see, but the arrow is basically pointing to a module name. And next to that is the load point and entry point address of where that module resides in KIC storage, and then the next field would be the length. Next foil, please. Now, the converse of this is the same output from DFH PD 630 PG equals 3, which shows a correctly linked module. You'll notice that there's two modules in this calling sequence. The arrow is pointing to actual module name EasyACIC 01, so our true has been invoked. So the calling sequence is basically from bottom up. From the application, which would then have issued the DFHERM call from our stub, which then invokes our true. So this would be a depiction of an application that's sitting in a correctly linked application in our true as it should be. Foil 11, please. This is the same. This foil depicts actually browsing. I know you can't see this, but this is IPCS browse of a dump of the KIC data space. This is not a transaction dump, but rather an SVC or system dump of the, or console dump of the KIC's region. So what this is depicting is we located the load point of where the PGM output told us the load module was loaded in KICs, and it puts us at the beginning of the load module. Also, one of the other fields in the PG equals 3 output is the length of the load module. So what I'm showing here is, normally you you would, to look for the EZACSEAL eye catcher in the load module in the dump, you would scroll down from the top of the module. And I don't know the reason for this, but sometimes the EZACSEAL is at the beginning of the module. If it's not, then it there's a possibility it could be at the end of the module. Next foil, please. So what this is depicting is I did a locate for the length of the module, so I basically went to the bottom of the module in storage, and I'm backing up, and you'll eventually find the eye catcher EZACACL if the load module has is correctly linked to include EZACACAL. You could also, and I know the other option is in a dump, you could actually, if you knew the load module name of your application program, you could actually find the entry point address. It's a little bit more difficult, but if you're versed in the IPCS formatters and KICS, it makes it a little easier than trying to do finds in a dump. And I'm not sure if everyone is on the same level here as far as dump reading, so I won't really cover this too much. Foil 13, please. Now, this last method of locating the stub EZACACL is actually going to ISPF Browse and browsing the actual load module name of the application program. This is probably the easiest way to find things. And all you simply do is find EZACACAL. If it was in the load module, you'll see the results in foil 14. And this is showing the eye catcher of EZACSEL with the compile and link date and the comp ID for TCP/IP. Okay, foil 15. Now that we have our background information covered, I'm going to go right into the problems. The first problem I'd like to talk about is a problem that is seen after customers have migrated to KICS TS23 or KICS TS31 from a previous release of KICS, for instance 2.2 or previous. The symptoms will, and this will actually occur as soon as the migration takes place and you start running a production workload. So these are the messages that you may see you'll most likely see in the KICS transient data queue and also on the system console. The additional symptoms you might see the SL or the and the SO kick subtask terminated with admin easy Charlie 6 admins. Foil 16, please. This is one of the this method EZY1325I is issued for every time our listener, the CSKL listener, starts a server transaction in KICS. Basically, if a client connects in, it sends a TRAN ID that we will start. And we actually put this message up to represent what that TRAN ID was. The purpose of showing this message is it will be you want to go back in your transient data queue and find this message right before the BPX P010I message or the Ebenezer Charlie 6 occurred. And the reason you want to look for this message is the TRAN ID that's identified will be the transaction that was started that caused this the sync kills to be issued, and that's what those BPX1 messages are all about. There was a BPX1 sync kill done as a result of this transaction. So this is just a debugging tool that we use to help identify the transaction to help you actually locate the application program that you may have to investigate. Foil 17, please. This is the solution to this problem. It's basically to ensure that the application has EZACACAL included in it correctly. And what you'd have to do is probably go back to the previous foils that I spoke about and run through the whole process of determining if your application is correctly linked. If it's not correctly linked, and this step is taken from our IPCICS sockets guide, is to actually relink the application to explicitly include EZACACAL. Foil 18, please. Now, I want to point out I've documented this as a solution, but it really is not a solution. It is really a band-aid to the real problem. I'm going to mention two APARs here, and this is for ZOS customers running ZOS version 1, release 5 and above. There's a Unix System Services APAR, OABLE 12246, and a in a ComServer IPA PAR PK08885. These two APARs will correct the problem of the SID kill and also the Ebenezer Charlie 6 admins that occurred. And I'll get into a little bit more why this problem occurred in CICS 2.3 and not in CICS 2.2 a little further down. But the point I want to make here is this APAR will correct the problem, but you still, if an application is not correctly linked, there is still the possibility to hang a whole entire CICS region from doing productive work, and that includes non-socket related work. For instance, if an application is running under the QR task and not the true or our subtask, and it issues a blocking type receive a call, for instance, like a receive or a read or a select with a high timeout value, and the data is not being received from the network, then that application will sit in the QR task in an external MVS wait until either the timer expires on the select or data is sent from the remote side. And this would be basically seen as an entire region hang. So that's the reason I want to basically say that this solution is really a Band-Aid. I mean, it's something that these fixes aren't really something that should be applied and also in unison with the applications being corrected. Coil 19, please. This foil, I'm trying to depict another flavor of a cause for programs not being linked correctly. And they basically stem from the fact that they were not written correctly to begin with. COBOL applications that do a call for EZA-SOKET are required to put the call, the EZA-SOKET, in single quotes. If that call is not included in single quotes, then the EZA socket call will not be resolved. Will not be resolved statically, which is basically from link edit. It will be called dynamically, which will cause an external load of EZA socket to be done. That in turn would cause the CICS system programmer to have to include EZA socket in the CICS PPT, which is not required, which shouldn't be, is not necessary. So I want to depict the solution to this one on foil 20, please. The program needs to be corrected to look as it does in this foil to call single quote EZA socket single quote. And then also the EZA socket, EZA SOKET module should be removed from the KIX PPT, and also EZA CACL should then be linked correctly in the module as it should for all socket function calls. Coil 21, please. Okay, this foil is depicting the change that occurred in CICS from CICS 2.2, PS2.2 to CICS Transaction Server 2.3 that caused this problem to occur. Notice in the QR task, and this is depicting what CICS 2.2 looked like. The QR task issued a set default dub, and it said dub is processed as this function. This is a Unix System Services function call, which an application will use to set up its dubbing preferences to be dubbed as a Unix process. So this is all Unix-related information. What I'm trying to depict here is the KIX job stack, job step TCB, and the subtasks that run under it. The QR task in particular in this case was dubbed as a Unix process. Now when the application runs in our environment, we won't have to call, there's some functions in our result, some TCPIP functioning requires a TCPIP job name to be located under normal circumstances. In the CICS environment, that job name is known, so therefore we don't have to go look for that job name in a TCP data file if the application was linked correctly. If the application was not linked correctly, we would have to call a resolver function to read the TCP data file. Part of that resolver function requires the resolver to dub that past that called the resolver as a Unix process, if it was not dubbed as a process. In this case, since CSCS 2.2 is dubbed as a process, our resolver does not have to dub this OMBS process as an OMBS process, and therefore we won't get through the processing that causes us to terminate the subtask. Coil 22, please. This is the change that was made in KIC 2.3 that manifested this problem. Notice that the set default dub process function call was moved to the job step task from the QR task. This function then now basically, in this scenario, the QR task is not dubbed as a Unix process. I want to just reinforce this. If this stuff was all done by CSCS development for particular reasons, so they can control what tasks are being dubbed as Unix processes and to protect their subtasks from being KIC killed. So in this scenario, the QR task is not dubbed as a Unix process. So this is where the susceptibility comes in if an application is linked incorrectly. The QR subtask is not dubbed as a Unix process. An application that is linked incorrectly that runs under the QR task will call a resolver to locate the TCPIP job name. When our resolver code gets control, we check some flags in the task and realize that this task is not dubbed as a process. So we go ahead and dub this as a Unix process. We go look up the TCPIP job name and return control back to the application. But before that, we do a process cleanup. And that process cleanup is what's causing the ABEND, Easy Charlie 6s, and the SIG kills to be generated. So those two APARs corrected the problem where we were not undubbing every single subtask. Because notice, let me go back one step here. The QR task in this picture attaches the KIC subtask, there's an SL subtask, an SO subtask, some L8 subtasks, and all of our reusable subtasks used by KIC sockets. So the default action for the process cleanup call that the resolver does in the Unix environment is to undub all processes that were attached. So basically it detaches all these subtasks and does process cleanup, which causes SIG kills to be generated, which causes the error you're seeing. Coil 23, please. Okay, the next issue I'm going to cover is child serve performance issues that may be seen. This symptom you may see delays between the execute CICS start and the give socket issued by the listener, and then between that and the first socket function call issued by the child server, which should be a take socket. So the delay will be between the give socket and the subsequent take socket issued by the socket, the server transaction. This can be seen either in a CSCS trace, a SOC API C trace that I'm going to talk about a little later, or by other CSCS monitoring tools that are available to customers. Coil 25, please. If this particular scenario is being seen in your environment, the main culprit of this is something called dispatch. We can set dispatching priority on our subtasks. So the subtasks that are attached by the endpass parameter, our paths there's a parameter that goes in unison with those called DPRTY, and that sets the dispatching priority of those subtasks. So the caution here is setting this DPRTY option to a non-zero value has a negative effect on the subtasks. So it basically lowers the MBS dispatching priority of that subtask to be lower than the actual CSCS address space is. So that would actually cause the delays that you're seeing when the server transactions are running. So our recommendation is to set DPRTY to zero. In order to verify what your DPRTY settings are, you can use the supplied EZAC transaction that comes with the CSCS sockets interface and you can display, do an easy AC, comma display, comma CICS, and if it requires it to be changed, you can do an easy ACIC alter, comma CICS, to change that parameter. Foil 26, please. Client server take socket failures. Foil 27? Thank you. This may show up in two different flavors. An application program may see a take socket function call fail with an error no 113, which is EBADF. Or you may see an EZY1303I message stating that if the module EZACSEO2, in this case is our listener, had a give socket timeout, and the transaction that it was waiting for the take socket to occur from is associated with the transaction ID in that message. So that is the transaction indicated by transaction ID on this foil would be the message that actually is failing. This problem would occur after maintenance or an upgrade occurred. No changes to the application would have taken place, but this problem may manifest itself. Foil 28, please. Problem is that the take socket is failing because it is not correctly passing the full 8 bytes of the giver's task name on the take socket call. What happened is basically we open ZOS comp server, APAR PQ95048, amended the listener to send a unique task name for each child task, and then we actually enforce the requirement that the task name on the take socket call issued by the child server matches exactly with the giver's task name. So if there's a discrepancy at all, we'll fail the call with this EBADF. And I basically went through the steps here. What happens? When a new connection arrives to the listener, it will read a transaction ID passed in from the client, and then it issues an execute kick start on that transaction name to start the transaction. And that becomes the child server. In that execute start command, we pass an 8-byte listener task name. The listener then issues a give socket to transfer the socket to the child server task. So it's now required by the server to issue a take socket call, but before it does that, it does a kicks retrieve to retrieve the data passed by the listener, for instance, the listener's subtask ID and things of that nature. The server task then does a take socket, and it extracts the task name passed by the listener. If the listener task name does not match, then the take socket that the server issues will fail with an EBADF. Some of the main reasons for this failing can be a C program that was using copy string or a copy string function to copy the task name. Because of the way the string copy function works, additional data may be copied or less data may be copied than the required 8-byte field. That's why we recommend using memcopy with a length of 8 instead of using string copy. Foil 29, please. I'm going to go over the SOC API trace that is shipped with the ZOS comp server IP product to give a high-level picture of what this take socket failure actually would look like and how you, a customer, or a vendor application writer can actually use this trace to debug a similar problem. Foil 30, please. The SOC API option was added in OS 390 version 2.10, and it's added to the component SIS TCP/IPC trace. As I mentioned, it was provided to use for application developers to debug their programs, and it shows the parameter lists, and it shows the return codes and things of that nature, and it'll give you a little bit more of a picture of that as we get to it. It creates a call entry record containing the input parameters and a call exit record containing the output parameters from each socket function. Foil 31, please. Okay, this foil, unfortunately, this is another one of those that's really difficult to read. I'm just going to highlight some of the key fields here. What this is showing is a CICS listener issuing a selectX function, socket function. Some of the key fields here, for instance, are the socket numbers that the application is actually monitoring. Those are represented as bitmasks, and they're laid out under the selected socket. If there was a timeout value, in this case, it's 30 seconds, we show that value. and then we show the actual socket numbers representing those bits in the bit strings. Foil 32. This shows the return from the select. Some of the key fields in this is the return code at the bottom of the page, which gives the application the number of sockets that are ready for either reading, writing, or take socket, or exception, basically. We return the number of the sockets, the descriptor numbers that were returned, that were ready. In this case, we return a read mask with socket 0 on, and you'll be able to see that if you print the presentation out in the PDF. Socket 33, please. Okay, this is depicting what a new connection arriving from the network would look like if you were to trace use a socket API trace while the listener was running in your CSCS region. An accept function is used to accept a new connection from a network client. Some of the key fields here are the remote IP address and port number of the client that just connected in. This is helpful information if you've got specific clients that you're concerned about tracing and you want to be able to verify that they're sending the correct data, things of that nature. And then the bottom is showing the REST code, which is the new socket descriptor that is actually created for the success to represent this connection. Foil 34, please. Once the listener accepts a new connection, it has to then pull that socket for data. And the data that we're looking for in this case would be a transaction ID sent from the client program. So what this is depicting is the listener is pulling two sockets now. There's a socket 0 and a socket 1. Socket 0, in this case, is our listening socket, so we're going to pull that socket for new incoming connections. And socket 1 will be pulled for data for this new connection we just accepted. And then once again, there's a 30-second time on this select as well. Foil 35 is... This foil is representing that select completing. Once again, at the bottom, it shows the number of ready sockets. And in this case, socket 1 is ready for reading. It returns socket selected 1, and the read mask bit for socket 1 is on. So that's basically telling us that this listener has some data that just came in on this new connection, for this new connection. Well, 36, please. So the next call, logically, that the listener would issue would be a receive function. And what it does is the listener, by default, will request to read 50 bytes, but we're really only looking for the first 4 bytes plus some additional CICS execute start information that we may use when we start the transaction. So there should be no application-specific data in this receive that we just actually issued. In this case, the top entry is showing the receive entry, so that's the application issuing the receive, and the next entry is the receive exit, which is completion of that receive. And notice we actually print out the data that was actually received. In this case, it's ASCII data representing TIIP, which is a transaction ID that the listener will now start. Foil 37, please. As I mentioned, the next function that the listener will do is to start this transaction. So it would issue an execute kickstart. Obviously, that won't be traced in our socket layer, but it will be traced in a kick trace. And then the next logical socket function that the listener would do would be a give socket. So this call is passing control now to a server transaction that will be started called PIIP. So we're basically just passing the socket descriptor to that server. Once that take socket occurs, the listener is no longer involved in the data transfers, and all the traffic is then passed from the client directly to the server task, which is PIIP in this case. Notice that the task name in this case, I guess I can read it out, 05 able 1 Fox 4 Fox 4 Fox 1 Fox 0 Fox 7 Dog 3. So that's the subtask name of the transaction that the listener's subtask name. That's what we just passed. So it's up to the server now to explicitly, on the take socket function, request that subtask name. And then the bottom entry showing the return code from the give socket, which is return code 0, which indicates the call completed successfully. Foil 38, please. This trace entry has one typo that I apologize for. It should read, the CSS listener again issues a select that's waiting for a connection request or a take socket to occur. Okay, so that's really what it should be, not received data. So notice that in this trace entry, we have the read mask for socket 0 on, and we also have the exception mask for socket 1 on. That exception mask is a method for the listener to pull when the server actually does the take socket and start. So we know that the server actually took the socket, and we can now close our socket and get out of the picture, so to speak. Coil 39, please. This trace entry is showing the child server actually starting. There's some specific things that you'll notice that are different in this trace entry. The tie address. The tie address for the server transaction program will be different than that of the listener. And also the MBS TCB, which is unreadable in this foil, unfortunately, but the PDF shows it very clearly. There's an MBS task name, which represents the subtask for this transaction that we're going to use out of our reusable pool, and that will also be different than the CSKL subtask. Also notice the subtask parameter in blue in this case. That's the subtask ID that was passed. That's the subtask ID of this child server task. So what this is showing is the next FOIL will show a take socket occurring by the child server. This init API will be done on every single instance of a take socket that's done by the child server. FOIL 40, please. So this is the actual take socket call that the child server actually issues. And notice that the return code on this call fails with a red code -1 and a error note 11EZ, which is EBADF. This depicts the problem that we were describing where the task ID does not match that of the giver. There's a difference between the task ID that was passed on the give socket and the task ID that was passed on the take socket by the child server. Because of that APAR that I mentioned earlier, we enforce a restriction where the task ID and the give socket and take socket must match. So this application needs to be corrected to ensure that the task ID that it passes matches exactly what the server passed. FOIL 41, please. For additional information, you can refer to the ZOS Comp Server IP Diagnosis Guide. It will give some additional examples of some of the trace records that I just went over. It talks a little bit more on how to obtain a SOC API C trace and then how to format the SOC API trace using IPCS formatters. FOIL 42, please. What I'd like to document here is what the basic documentation request for CICS, TCP/IP CICS socket applications would be for level 2, to contact level 2 support. We would request a C trace with a component ID, a component of SysTCPIP and the following options: socket, PFS, SOC API, engine, and TCP. And the key here is to filter the trace on the CICS region job name, and then a dump of the CICS and TCPIP address spaces. There may be cases where we may require a Kickbox trace or a packet trace or OMBSV traces, but those are cases where your level 2 rep will probably indicate those things are required. The first C trace for TCPIP is the minimum requirement. For additional information on how to collect those traces and how to send the documentation to ComServer IT support, please refer to information APAR II12014 for instructions how to collect the trace and how to filter, and II12030 for how to send the documentation using FTP. That concludes the presentation for today. I'd just like to proceed to FOIL 43. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to webcast and conference information. You can visit WebSphere.org for user information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. and the ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. Finally, the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products that are of interest to you. I'd like to now return control back to Jennifer for any questions that may be arising.
Thank you, Howard, for a great presentation. At this point, Sheila, we would like to open the line for questions.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please be sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that's star 1 on your touch-tone telephone, and we'll pause for just a moment to give everyone an opportunity to signal. And Ms. Chen, at this time, it appears we have no questions from the phone audience, so I would like to turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, thank you, Sheila. At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. Remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technological Exchange site early next week. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on this site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Howard, for presenting today. Have a great day, everyone.
And that does conclude today's presentation. We thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect at this time.